Tonight's shiur, Parshas Vayikra, sponsored by the Weinbach family of Ramat Beit Shemesh, Levi Nishmas, Yaakov Yitzhak, Ben Chaim. Parshas Vayikra begins with the word Vayikra, which has a small letter Aleph in the word Vayikra. The Kli Yakar explains that there's a hint mentioned by the Yalkut that the Cheder children should begin learning their limudim from Parshas Vayikra and Chum, not Shmos, not Bereshis. What's the reason? So Chazal tell us, Ma Korbanas Taharim Afatinokosken. Of course, Vayikra is full of the Korbanas. And just like the Korbanas, a person has to be Tar, and the Korbanas are Tarim. So too, children are blichet, so the children which are pure should learn from the parsha which is pure. So the hint is from Vayikra, because the Aleph is little. Aleph, of course, is the first letter of the Aleph base, so that's where you begin. And it's little to hint to the children who are little, that's where they begin to learn from. The Pardes Yosef says that another reason why the children begin learning from Parshas Vayikra, because the parsha deals with, as we said, korbanos. So we're trying to tell the children that, explain to them, they should understand that for Yiddishkeit, sometimes a person has to be makriv a korban. He has to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice for Yiddishkeit. It doesn't always go easy, but as Avdei Hashem, we have to sacrifice something for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Therefore, right at their onset of their learning, learn the parsha dealing with korbanos. Not only do the children have to be makriv, also it begins, of course, with the parents. The parents have to be makriv for the chinuch of their children. There's a mice of a young boy who was living in Europe. His name was Meir. And one day he's in his house and he hears some crying from the kitchen. So he comes closer and he hears his mother. She's crying bitterly. So he goes up to his mother and says, "Ima, why are you crying? What's wrong?" So she's uncontrollable. She can't stop crying. She says, Ima, why? What's wrong? Why are you crying? She says, "Meir, what can I tell you? You know, we hired a melamed for you to come to teach you." Right? In those days, they didn't just go to schools. The kids that were zoicha to learn are only those that had their parents were able to pay for their malamut to come to teach their kids. They were a very poor family. And the mother said, "You know, we were able to get some means together, minimally, and we offered a certain amount of X amount of rubles to this malamut to come and teach. He was supposed to come today, and he didn't come." So she said to him, I'm crying because, he didn't come today. And who knows, maybe it's because I didn't offer him enough money. Because of that, he's not here." And she keeps crying. So Mira says, tries to calm his mother down and says, "Ima, don't worry. Okay, he didn't come today. Maybe somebody got delayed on the derech. I'm sure he'll come tomorrow." So she says, "Mira, I know he'll come tomorrow. I'm not worried about that. I'm sure he'll come tomorrow." So he says, "Why are you crying?" She says, "I'm crying because of today. Because he didn't come today. What about your Torah learning for today? That's why I'm crying. Tomorrow will come, but today went to waste." So from there, Meir learned that what it means, what's one day of Torah learning. The one day of Torah learning is worth to cry about. Who was this Meir? This Meir grew up to be Rav Meir Shapiro Milivlin. He was, of course, the founder of Daf Yomi and the Yeshiva Chach Milivlin. And he got it from his childhood. That the importance of what Torah learning is all about. In fact, I saw a beautiful vort, also happens to be from Rameir Shapira, taich on the Chazal that says, "Hisaru b'nei anim shemehem teitzei Torah." That you have to be careful with the children of anim, because from them Torah comes out. So he asks, why dafka? Why dafka the Torah giants, dafka come from houses that are from poverty-stricken homes? Why is that the case? He says, beautiful. He says, what happens? You have a house like we saw in the story, right? Didn't have means, but they gave up their makri for the chinuch of their children. So what happens? So the child sees and learns from it and says, wow, look at what my parents are giving up for the Torah. All the creature comforts, whatever it might be, like you might document that, and why? Just so I can learn Torah. So what do they pick up from that? Boy, Torah's chashuv. They're willing to give up all these things to learn Torah. Obviously, Torah is a very chashuv thing. And this is what they learn as a child. So Mela, they grow up understanding the chashivas of Torah, and then they grow up to be gdolei Torah. Whereas people that have it good, and that, so they don't, not maki for the Torah, so they don't, the children don't see the chashivas of it. So it's dafka through the houses of Ni'im, they teitze Torah. It's, you know, we don't have to go, you know, that far back. Once was at a simcha, a number of years ago, my wife's uncle, Zichrono Livracha, alive anymore, but he was speaking at a simcha. He was in Europe, last generation, and he also, you know, his parents, as my wife's grandmother, right? She died in the Holocaust with other siblings. But he recalled the story at the simcha. He was getting up and speaking, and very emotional. And he said that he remembers that parents sent him off to yeshiva. Again, they were very, very poor. My wife's, the grandparents, the family's very poor. So her uncle came from a very poor home, he said. They had nothing. I have pictures of the way they're dressed, like hand-me-down clothes from how many times, and hardly shoes, and they're like really, really poor, very poor people. And the parents wanted to send their kid to yeshiva. And the mother especially was once Moser Nefesh. She knew she wanted to send a kid, but didn't have too much means. So one day, he went out to go daven or whatever the case might be. And this was just before he was leaving to supposed to go to yeshiva. He says he remembers, he comes back home, and he sees a new hat and jacket waiting for him there on the table. So he comes in, he was shocked, and he says, what's this? So she says, how can you go to yeshiva without a hat and jacket? You didn't have anything. But he was wondering, like, where did she get this hat and jacket from? They couldn't afford it. And then he noticed that all the things in their house, which was nothing, they found, they had one little artifact that was worth something. I don't know, a little silver candlestick or whatever it might be. He said that was the only gashmias in the entire house. This one little silver thing, that's it. Nothing else of gashmias. And he noticed it was missing. And he said, well, where's that, that silver thing, whatever? And his mother said, she went out and she sold it to have money to buy him a hat and jacket so he can go into yeshiva. And he'll never forget that. His mom said, a little bit of gashmi, that my son has to go to yeshiva, he has to look like a man, she has to have a hat and jacket. Musagi. It's also another ma'aser of Shalom Shvadron brings it down with the Reed Baz of Yaakov David, that when he was already an old man himself, he was in Tzfat, in his later years, he was living in Tzfat. One day he comes to Shul for his yahrzeit, the yahrzeit of his father. So he was standing there in Shul, and he was waiting for the minyan to get together, and people looked at him, he saw he was crying. So they said, that's strange, why? So they went up to him, he says, what's wrong, why are you crying? So he says, today's the yahrzeit of my father. He said, okay, and he said, I understand. I mean, this is a man, a very elderly yid. His father died like 50 years ago, okay? And he was an old man himself, so it's not like, just the other day, his father, it's been years and years and years, and he's still so emotional. So they asked him, why are you, so emotional about your father who died so many years ago? So he says, I'll tell you. He says, we came from a very poor home also. And we had no money, and my father really wanted me to have an education, a Torah education. So mamash also a moser nefesh for me to learn. And one day, I had my own private melamed, And one day, my father gets a note. I bring home a note from my melamed. Father opens it up. He read it, and he started to cry. I said, what's wrong? He said, it says here that, the last 3 months I didn't pay because we didn't have any money, and it's the cost of a ruble a month, and I owe the Malamed 3 rubles, and he writes in here that if I don't come up with the money, he's going to have to stop. And he says, how can he stop teaching my son? And he started to cry. He said, what am I going to do though? So I owe him 3 rubles, and he's going to stop if I don't pay him. So all of a sudden he said, wait a second, I have an idea. what? He recalled that that morning, this happened, that when he was in shul, he heard there was a gvir who was in the shul from the community, and he was talking how he's just built a house for his son, and he's missing an oven. In those days, they had these big oven that they used to heat the house with, and he didn't have an oven to think. So what's the big deal? So he's a wealthy man, you put in an oven. Problem was, for some reason, there was a shortage of bricks. There were no bricks. And no bricks, no oven. So he heard that the gvir said, if anybody can find some bricks, get all of some bricks, I'll pay him for the bricks, and if he'll put up the oven as well, I'll pay him altogether 6 rubles for the bricks and for putting up the oven. So my father knew how to, put together ovens and stuff. So what did he do? He says, he went to the oven in our house, okay? He took apart the oven, took brick by brick apart, and he went to the gvir, and he rebuilt the oven in the gvir's son's, home that he was building. He rebuilt the oven over there so he'd have them, and as he said, he paid him 6 rubles. He came home, he went up to me, and he says, "Here, take the money, 6 rubles, take it to your malamed, say 3 is for the last three months, and here's a 3 months down payment, for the next 3 months. 3 rubles for the next 3 months. 6 rubles that he got for the oven." He said, "Now you have no idea how freezing we were. I mean, this is the oven in the European winter. It was freezing, and as it is, I think we had these big feather blankets. We had nothing. We had smart routine. We had rags to cover ourselves with, and we were all freezing to death because we had no oven, right? But it didn't matter. I had to have my malamed. That was it." So he said, "You want to know why I'm crying?" He says, "This morning I got up to go to shul for the Seikadish, for my father, for the Yortzeit. So I opened the door, and it was winter time in Tzfas, whatever, and I felt, wow, it's cold outside." And I said, I had a little havamina, a thought that, maybe I shouldn't go to shul today. It's so freezing outside, walking there. So I started thinking to myself now, how could I even have a thought? What did my father do for my education, right? We were freezing to death in Europe, right? Just so I can learn Torah, and I can have a havamina. I'm not going to go to shul to say Kaddish for him. So he said, that's why I'm crying. Another mice I saw of Shlomo Levinstein says that once a friend of his wanted to take him to be Menachem Mavel by someone. And he says, "I want you to come with me, because the son that's sitting Shiva, he knows all of Shas. It's a kedai to meet this guy." Fine. So he says, he goes to Menachem Mavel. And he was very curious to find out, what type of a house did this young man come from that he knows all of Shas. So they, started talking there at the Shiva. And the Avreich talked about his father. He said, "My father, and before the country, the Kama Medina, he had shares and he was working in Haifa for a bus company. It was called the Shachar Bus Company. That was Eged before it became Eged. It was a Shachar. So he had shares in the company and he was a driver. So he was doing quite well. However, he got word that the company was being Mechal Shabbos and having buses drive on Shabbos or whatever, and he didn't know what to do because, he was out of shares in the company and he wanted to know, can he continue with the company, even though they're now being Mechal Shabbos. So he went to his Rav, Rav Klein, in Haifa, and Rav Klein said, this is I'm not going to pass on this. This is Dine Nefashis over here, and I'm not going to take responsibility. Go to the Chazon Ish. I'll write down exactly the shaila, everything clear. You just have to show the Chazon Ish the letter, and whatever he says, he says." So my father traveled to Bnei Brak, went into the Chazon Ish, showed him the letter. Chazon Ish said one word, Asr. That's it. So what did my father do? He didn't even go home. He went straight from the Chazon Ish, straight to the offices of the bus company. He handed in his resignation. He sold, got rid of all his shares in the company, right there on the spot. He didn't even go home. Because you start going home, you start there, talking to the wife, that. He didn't want to even, have any hesitation. Straight to the office, gave up the job, and from that day on, he had a nice parnasa till then, was mamish, a life of difficulty. We used to sell soaps. and used to carry these low, this whole big bags of soaps on his back and go from house to house or whatever. So Mamish, just to make ends meet. So eventually he got some reparation money from Germany, so he bought an old bus, which at least he was able to drive around in this old bus to sell his soaps. And then after that, in the end of his days, he ended up being like a caretaker in a yeshiva. So Mekitzer, his whole life was after that was one big difficulty parnasa-wise. And my father, he said, recalled that once he was passing by, they had a neighborhood there for the pensioners of this bus company. You know, the ones that were now on pension and retired. And they had a beautiful little area where they had townhouses and a pool and a whole beautiful... And he bumped into one of the fellows he used to, you know, drive, you know, the buses with many years ago. And he bumped into him and he said, look at you, what'd you get yourself into? Right? Look at me, look at this beautiful house I have and this, and what do you have? What do you have from selling away your shares and that? Look at me and look at you. He said, my father came home and he says, I don't understand what the guy was talking about. What do I have? Look what I have. I have sons that are talmidei chachamim. They know all shas. And what do you mean? What do I have? What does he have? Look what I have. Look what I have for. Says that's called mesiras nefesh for Torah. Okay, let's move on. It says in the pasuk varachu bnei Aaron hakohanim esanetachim. So the when the korban of an animal is brought up to the mizbeach, so they would cut and shech the animal, and they would cut up the animal into various parts. So the head was also had to be brought to the mizbeach, and so you have the head, and the kohen would hold it by the horns, you know, the head, and where it was shechted, the head was cut off. So the area there didn't look too nice, you know, it's like all dripping with blood, and it was not very pleasant. So what did he do? He had to take from the chalev, the fats of the animal, and put it on the area which is where the shechita was to cover up the blood, so it shouldn't look so bad. So that's the mice what they did. Zalman Saraskin says we have a lesson from here. He says we're showing the somebody who's chote who sins. He says, why is a person sin? He says because his head is in the shuman. His head is in the fats. And we put the fats on the head to show what causes a person to be. The person goes after the shuman, all the good things in life. He's too involved with all his time, isn't good. He's in his head, is in the shuman, in all the good things. So that's what causes the person to sin. That's the rem is with the head and the fats. The Chazal tell us that nowadays, unfortunately, we don't have korbanas. So the our shulchan, our table, we eat by, that's the kapara. That's the korban, bizman hazeh. And especially the person that invites anim to the table, has come and eat, that's the person's korban. Also, this beautiful vort, they say by Lot. Lot's wife, we know, turned into a netziv melech, into a pillar of salt. So Chazal tells, why did you turn to a pillar of salt? Because she didn't give salt to the anim. When people, you know, offer them salt. So the question is, what's significance? Why give salt? What's the significance? They say because if a person gives salt to somebody, a person needs salt, what happens? He gets thirsty. So she didn't want to give salt, so the anim shouldn't get thirsty, want to drink more. Drink more and more and more. She didn't want to have to, you know, give so much to the anim, so she didn't give salt. So in Mida Keneged Mida, she didn't want to give salt to the Ani, so she didn't have to give him too much to drink, etc. So therefore she turned into a pillar of salt. So nowadays it says, Al-Kor Korban Cha, Takrib Melech, it says in our Sedra, that this is L'Rabot HaShulchan, so L'Hefech, a person has to do L'Hefech. Shouldn't be stingy with Anim. You have to want to give to the Anim. Which brings to mind another Maisa with, it was another uncle of my wife, a different uncle. But he also, those in Europe, in those days, they used to eat what's called teg, right? Yom. In other words, they didn't have a chadar ochel in the yeshiva. They used to go to people's houses. So he my wife's uncle will never forget that he was set up by a certain family. And they used to sit down to eat. And they served, I think it was stuffed cabbage or something. And he noticed that all the he had these various stuffed cabbages, you know, and on his plate. And when the woman of the house put down the plate, one of the stuffed cabbages had a string around it. Okay, not the other ones. And when she would serve, she would always give him, this bachur, the cabbage with the string around it. You know, I'll never forget this. And he was wondering, what significance have the string around the cabbage? Until one day, he realized that his stuffed cabbage had no meat in it. Right? All the other cabbages had meat. The one with the string was the cabbage without the meat. I didn't want to give the meat away to a stranger, to a bachur. He'll never forget this. You know, the string, he didn't want to give the meat. So that's being stingy. That's a bachur. On the lighter side, there was a couple of husband and wife. They're very stingy, kamtsanim, misers, and they never had people over their house. And so they're getting older. They said, you know what? It's time we have to change. We have to start having guests at least once, you know, in our life, you know. So they said, okay, that's it. This Shabbos, we're going to have invite a poor man to our table. So, sure enough, they had a poor man come, and they served them challah, whatever, and you know, the Baal Pai says, you know what, let's make this really special. So he took out a bottle of booze he had, schnapps, right, and he put it on the table, said, you know, let him have a little bit of schnapps also. So, all of a sudden, they see this poor man take the bottle of schnapps, fill up the cup with the schnapps, take the challah, dip it, like, soak it in the schnapps, and eating the challah. He takes another big piece of challah, sticking in the schnapps, absorb, eats it, and he's more and more pouring another cup, sticking the challah in, absorbing it, eating it up. And you can imagine these misers were going crazy, you know, they're only bottle of schnapps, and he's eating all our challah, schnapps. So he wanted to hint, you know, to the poor man, you know, to stop. So he says, as he's eating, he says to him, hey, listen, I got a question for you. So he's like, yeah, what do you want? So he says, you know, I have a question. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, there was with Klal Yisrael, you know, Yom Suf, okay? And what did Hashem do? He split the Yom. So he says, I got a question. He says, I don't know, why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu have to split the Yom? Why didn't he just, you know, give Klal Yisrael some challah? They can dip it into the Yom, absorb the, you know, the sea into the challah, and then get rid of the water that way. You know, why did Hashem have to part the Yom like that? You know, hinting to this guy that, you know, maybe he should stop. So the guy says, as he's eating, says, no, it can't be, it can't be. So he says, why? He says, what do you mean why? He says, the Hashem parted the sea when? Shvi shal Pesach, there's no challah on Pesach. While on the topic of salt, there's a beautiful vort that the Ben Ish Chai says, name of the Marsham. It's a Gemara in Brachas that says how Yisurin, when a person suffers, Yisurin are a kapara, that takes away a person's averas. Yisurin mechaprin. So there's a machloikis between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, where do we learn this from? Where do we learn that Yisurin are mechaprin? So Rabbi Yochanan says it's a kal v'chomer from shein v'ayin, meaning just like if a master takes out the tooth or the eye of his Eved Knani, the Eved Knani goes free. So if just take out one limb, the eye, the tooth or whatever of the person, makes him free. So too, Yisurim, which affect the whole person's body, all the more so makes him free, you know, frees himself of his averas. Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish says a different limo. Where do we learn that Yisurin are mechaper? We learn it from salt, right? That we learn Gzeira Shava, we have bris, it says bris by salt, and it says bris by Yisurin. And just like salt, Reish Lakish said, if you put salt on meat, what happens? It softens it up, it makes it good. So too, where it says bris by Yisurin as well. So too, by Yisurin, the Yisurin make a person well, it makes them good, takes away his averas. Okay. So the Marsham says beautifully, he says, what's the nafgamina though between these two places of learning from? So the nafgamina is that if you're going to learn from the Eved, the Eved gets his tooth or eye knocked out, but what happens if a stranger knocks it out? Not his master. Then what happens? Does he go free? No. It's only if his master takes it out. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, it only works that he goes free if it comes from his master. So too, Yisurin, according to Reish Lakish, only works if you realize that it's coming from your master, it's coming from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If you realize the source, then it works. But if you think that, oh, why am I sick? Oh, I know I am sick. I ate something that wasn't good, or I was standing next to somebody who had the flu, or etc. That's why I'm sick, and not because the Kodesh Baruch Hu sent it, then Yisurin don't work. You have to know that it comes from your master. Whereas according to Reish Lakish, who says we learn it from the salt and the meat, it's not the case. What happens if a person wants to salt this piece of meat, but accidentally salts the other piece of meat? What happens? It's going to work the same. You don't have to have kavana where the salt goes. So too, it doesn't matter where the, as long as the person has the yisurin, it's going to work. He doesn't have to know exactly where it's coming from. That would be the nafka mina. Okay. We have in the Sedra brought down the various korbanas. We said we have the korban off, we have the korban mincha, and Chazal tell us, Sigmor increases, that if an ashir brings a korbanani, ashir has to bring an animal. If he brings a korbanani, let's say he brings a bird or he brings the mincha, a flower offering, he's not yotzi. Right, so he has to bring. An ashir can afford it. He has to bring something he can afford. He can't bring and be yotzi with the korban abanani. So the Chafetz Chaim used to say that nowadays, of course, we said we don't have korbanas. As we said, our table is a kapara. Giving tzedakah is a kapara. So too, just like in the time of the when we brought korbanas, an ashir can't bring a korbanani. So too, a ashir today can't be yotzi with a little donation. He has to give what he can afford. Another idea is that a person is not allowed to think, you know, very very often it happens, especially in school, right? You have a kid, he's at the top of the class. So what happens, he's a bright kid, naturally he doesn't put as much effort as he could because he thinks, look, I'm the best in the class. You know, he's the best, but that's what comes easy to him. So he doesn't go weiter because he says, I'm the best in the class. But no, a person can't, it's not supposed to look around and say, hey, I'm better than him, I'm better than him. You have to be the best you can be. Okay, not to what, compare yourself to others. And therefore, that's the same idea that as we said, an asher can't be yotzi with the korbanani. If you're an asher, if you have the potential, you have to live out your potential and not say, well, look, I'm better than these others. Okay, Hashem made the amanim, he made you an asher. So you have to live up to it, and you have to do the best you can. It's a beautiful mashal based on the Gemara in Brachas, Daf Mem Dal. It says, "Kol katan makdin, kol nefesh meshiv nefesh." The Gemara says over there that that something, if say we have a food, an animal, let's say a fish, okay, for example, that is not fully grown, that's called katan makdin. Then it's not healthy. If you eat a fish that's not fully developed, it's not healthy. But kol nefesh, meshiv nefesh, if you have, you eat something which is fully developed, then that's healthy. And that has nothing to do with the size. In other words, you can have a tiny little sardine, but if it's at its maximum, you know, growth, that's fine, it'll be healthy for you. But you can have a huge carp, but it's not fully developed, even though it's way bigger than a tiny little sardine, but since it's not fully developed, it's not healthy. So that's the nimshal, is what we're saying, right? You can be very small, but if you've done your maximum potential you could possibly do, it doesn't matter if you're small, but if that's all you can do, then you're healthy. That's you're 100%. Whereas you could be the biggest person in the world, biggest gadol, but if you could have even been a greater gadol, you could grow even more. It doesn't matter if you're big, but if you could even be bigger, that's unhealthy, then you're not living out to your maximum. Valach says that. Yeah, last on this topic, share with you one little last maisa. It's a famous story, but it's nogeya to the inyan over here, so we'll end with this. The story with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that there was once in his community in the East Side, there was a boxer, and a retired boxer. He used to be a boxer in his old days, and he was not from. And then when he was retired, you know, he's going crazy, you know what to do with himself anymore, you know, walking around his house and bored or whatever. His son was a Baal Tshuva. And he saw his son always with the sefer open, learning this, learning Gemara, learning whatever. And so one day he approaches his son and he says, you know, what's this? What are you learning over here? He says, it's the Gemara. He says, looks very interesting. Can you teach it to teach me? He says, Abba, you don't even know how to read the Aleph Beis. What am I going to teach you, Gemara over here? This is not even in, it's not in English, not even in Hebrew, it's in Aramaic, Bichlal. You know, you're not going to, I can't, how can I? He says, no, I want to learn. He says, you sure? He says, yeah, teach me. So fine. So he sits down, of course, the Aleph Beis and this and a lot, you know. And then after he gets a little bit of the, you know, basis of the reading and the vocabulary, so he starts off with the Daf, and they start learning a Daf. So what happened? They finally finished the Daf 1 year later. It took them the whole year to learn one Daf. So the father finished finally the Daf, his first Daf Gemara. And he was so excited, the father. He goes, I finished my first Daf Gemara. Wow. So he says, let's make a Siyum. So his son says, Abba, you don't make a Siyum on a Daf. You have to finish all Masechet. This is only a Daf, okay? You got to make a Siyum. He says, no. I said, I want to make a Siyum. He says, you don't make a Siyum on a Daf. He says, go ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, see what he says. So they lived in Rav Moshe's community. So the son went to the Rav Moshe and said, listen, told the story, how if I didn't know anything, I started teaching him. It took him about a year to finish the Daf, and he wants to make a Siyum. Isn't that ridiculous? Rav Moshe says, no. He says, no. He says, no, not ridiculous at all. Make a Siyum, for sure. Not only that, I'm coming to the Siyum. So sure enough, they made a Siyum, Rav Moshe came to the Siyum. So what happened? They had the Siyum, big party, celebrated the Daf. Wouldn't you know it, that same night, the father went to sleep and he didn't get up the next morning. It was Nifter. So so Rav Moshe Feinstein came to the Levaya, it was Maspid the man. And he said, Yesh kona olamo b'sha'achas, v'yesh kona olamo b'dafacha. So some people are kona, they're olam haba, in one moment, as the Gemara says, he applied it to here, and this fellow, he was kona's olam in one daf. You see, that was his maximum. That was his potential. That's all he could do. It took a whole year, but that's all he could do. He maximized. He was this sardine that was fully grown. He did the maximum that he can do. And Moshe said he was kona olamo with that. So it's a shame we should all take our potentials, our abilities and capabilities that Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us, and we should use them and live up to them and be the best we can be. And Kodesh Baruch Hu will see our efforts and crown them with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'Mehirah v'Yameinu.